Hey, this is Jeff Noble from the FASD Success Show. We have an amazing, amazing episode for you today. Today, we are talking to Jessica Birch, a young woman on the spectrum from Australia. This is my first ever two-part podcast series. I mean, I talked to Jessica and we talked about so much. I was like, there's so much goodness. We have to do this. So in part one, we're going to be exploring what it was like growing up undiagnosed. Despite having a supportive mom, she shares what life was like without a diagnosis as a child and teen, and what happened when she tried to make it on her own. Keep in mind, this episode might be difficult to listen to because of the intensity, but I think it offers inspiration because we know that with a diagnosis, support, knowledge, and understanding makes an individual on the spectrum thrive. Jessica is thriving, and we'll get to that in part two, but the story in part one is so valuable. So do what you got to do. Grab your shoes, grab a snack, whatever you need, and let's get after it.
Welcome to the FASD Success Show, the only podcast where you can get real-world information about fetal alcohol spectrum disorder. This show will help you create calm in the chaos, have hope for the future, and more importantly, save your sanity so you don't lose your flipping mind. Now, here's your host, caregiver turned world FASD educator, Jeff Noble.
Hey, everybody, welcome. Welcome to episode 107, whether this is your first episode or your 107th episode. Thank you so much for being here. I know how precious your time is, so the fact that you spend an hour and a bit with me every week is excellent. And if this is your first episode, you're with us, hello, hello. What a good time to be joining us. Let me tell you, first things first, right out of the gate, I apologize for a couple things, okay? I'm coming out with the apology first. Sorry that there wasn't a podcast last week. You know that my intention is always to do that, but last week was kind of hectic because I finished the 6-month online coaching program that we started back in November with that group. Time flies, and so we kind of have like an end of the session or end of the 6 months together, like a little graduation and stuff like that. So that was... I was exhausted, you know, and my whole team was working on that because we did a live event. So I apologize. And if you're like, what are you talking about? I do once a year, we do an online coaching program, and it's going to take, usually takes, we open registration in the fall. And so we'll do that again in the fall. And of course, trust me, you'll hear all about it as we get closer because shameless self-promotion, right? I want to make sure that everybody hears about it because in fact, it changes lives and does really good things. So, but now is not the time. You know, I guess I'm telling you why there wasn't one. Oh, yeah. And Mother's Day then was subsequently on Sunday, which is usually when I do this. But I was like, you know what? I'm not going to push it. Y'all would understand. It's not the first time this has happened. So sorry about that. If it's in your routine, if listening to the podcast is in the lineup and we weren't able to. And I know it's late this week. Simply because I do this on Sundays. And yesterday it was my birthday. And I was also dealing with a freaking chest cold. Oh, so if you could hear my voice, if it's a little nasally, this is why. And just, I guess, you know, I was tired. And when your body gets tired, it breaks down and you get sick. Plus, I have a toddler who, they're the harbingers of disease. And she was sneezing in my face for the last 2 weeks. So I was tempting fate and I lost this time. But I'm feeling 1,000% better. It's not good to feel sick, and you guys know exactly what I'm talking about, and I'm feeling better, so I'm ready to rock and roll Paw Patrol with you guys here. A couple of quick updates, and then we're going to get to our amazing interview today. First update, if you've been following us for any amount of time, you know in episode 97, we had Olga and Sergey. They are the couple from the Ukraine, and so in our free group, facebook.com/group/FASD forever, people were inquiring about an update from Olga because she hasn't been really active. So I thought, you know what, I'm going to give you guys the update on here as well. And basically what has happened was Olga went from her house in Kiev once the invasion happened, and they just up and left and went to their mom's, which was 3 hours in the Ukraine somewhere. I'm not sure of the specifics. And once it got too heavy there, they left and they journeyed to Poland. And we know that there was a whole humanitarian thing going on, but they made it. They stayed in Poland for about a month, I believe. And now they have immigrated. They have come to Canada, which where I live, right? So welcome to Canada, Olga, her two kids. You know, one of them is on the spectrum, and her husband, they are all there. They are in the greater Toronto area, and they feel good. So they're here, and they're safe, and that makes me feel better. And sometimes, you know, when you watch this stuff, and I'm not going to get too heavy on this aspect, but you know, when something that big happens, like a war, and you're watching the news and you feel it makes you feel hopeless, like there's always something that you can do. And in this case, this was something that we could do. Because what I ended up doing is offering, I have this thing called buymeacoffee.com. It's where people can go and they could support the podcast. But what we did is we turned that into coffees for Olga. And so all the proceeds are going to go right to them because they go into my account, and then I'm going to bring it to them. That's exactly what's happening. So I believe on the 26th of May of this year, the 2022, I am going down because I'm going to go to the Greater Toronto Area and actually take a little bit of a break. I'm going to take a week off, but you'll still get part two of this, so it'll be all good. Any hoozle. I'm going to go see them. I'm going to do an update podcast with them, actually sitting with them face to face, and give them the funds that we were able to raise. You, a part of the community. I know a lot of you guys did. If you haven't yet and you still want to pitch in, that'll go. It'll go right to them because, you know, it's expensive rent. Like, they got to just a car and they want to get their license. Like, could you imagine just starting over? They're starting over. So you can go to buymeacoffee.com/FASDsuccess. And they're coffees, but it's basically a donation. You put in how many you want, how many you could do. It goes into my account, and I'm going to bring it to them. And you're going to see it because I'm also going to take a little video. And then I'm going to do an audio podcast with them. Fun! Fun. So I look forward to seeing them. But you know what else is fun? Being a subscriber. If you have not subscribed yet to our show, you must! No, if you could. Please, if you could, please, that would be excellent. It helps us. It helps you. It helps you because as soon as we release a brand new episode, it's going to go right into your phone, tablet, however you listen to podcasts. It's going to help us because it's going to tell people that the show is relevant. So when they're searching, they could get the excellent help that they need by listening to us. So I appreciate that and I appreciate you. Okay, let's get rocking and rolling here. Okay, my guest, Jessica Birch, okay? Jessica Birch is awesome. She's from Australia. She's a young woman who didn't get a diagnosis until later in life. So to kind of make the story fast, there is this mom. Her name is Angeline Bruce. She's also been on my podcast. She's a birth mom, also from Australia. She's an alumni of our online coaching program. So she told me that she was going to be on a show. Angela was going to be on a show that was airing in Australia, and it was on a pretty big network. I think it's Our Project TV, but it's hosted by the host who is on their weekday show. You always see her in the clips. It's the funny clips. Anywho, but also included in this was Jessica Birch. Jessica was also in this piece on FASD. I'm going to play the piece. It's I'm going to play a minute of her talking from the project. And the project is called Hidden Epidemic of Fetal Alcohol Syndrome. You could find it on YouTube. It's from The Project. I'll put the link in the description in our blog post. But and you listen to this for a minute and you tell me if you didn't do what I did and reach out to her right away as soon as you heard that, because you knew that there was a story to tell and that there was a lot going on that she could definitely help our community. So have a listen. Again, this is The Hidden Epidemic of Fetal Alcohol Syndrome from The Project TV on YouTube. And yeah, have a listen, and then we'll come right back and get into the interview.
I thought that I was stupid. I thought that I was, to my core, a defective person.
Jess's earliest memories are of never quite fitting into the world around her.
I always felt like I was on the outside looking in. There was just confusion.
And as she grew, so did the loneliness and anxiety.
What I was seeing was all these people my age and then people younger than me surpassing me, getting degrees and driving cars and having babies and buying houses, and I couldn't understand it. It didn't matter how hard that I worked, I was never really going to meet the levels other people in my life expected of me, and that really wreaked a lot of havoc on my mental health, on my self-esteem.
Right? So, needless to say, it's not all doom and gloom, okay? It is not. But Jessica is going to paint an excellent, excellent, excellent picture for you about what it's like as an individual with FASD. And what you'll be able to do with this information is know how your kid is feeling, or avoid this altogether if you got a younger kid on the spectrum. This is valuable information. Jessica is an expert on FASD. She lives it every day, and she is doing amazing. And we'll get to, of course, in part two. So I'm going to play the interview, and then, of course, we'll come back. I'll share a couple of my thoughts, and then we'll get out of here. But if I'm ready, you're ready. All right, let's go. Ladies and gentlemen, here I am. I'm actually speaking to somebody in the future. I'm speaking to Jessica Birch all the way from Australia. She's an individual with FASD, but she's so much more than that. And we're going to find out all about her. Jessica, thank you so much for joining me on the show, dude. I appreciate it.
Oh, thank you so much for having me, Jeff. I couldn't be happier to be here. I'm super stoked and, yeah, just very happy.
Well, I'm stoked, dude, because honestly, I saw, like, I was like, oh my gosh, I got to talk to this girl. I saw after that piece you did for the news.
Oh, on the project, on the Sunday project.
Yes, I saw that because one of the moms I know also participated. Angeline, she participated in it, but I saw you and I thought, oh gosh, this is perfect. I got to get her to tell her story, but we'll work backwards after. But for those of you who don't know, Jessica and a bio mom and a few others did a piece. The bottom line is I know the girl, I know the woman who hosted it because we see her on clips all the time when she hosts the morning show. Like she's always on, so really popular, right? And so it was about FASD. And who approached you, do you remember, about being on it?
Yeah, so I had been doing work alongside FARE, which is the Foundation for Alcohol Research and Education in Australia. Quite a large organisation working really closely with individuals with FASD and to raise awareness. And it was through the FARE organisation that the Sunday Project had approached them to speak to me, and which I happily accepted. It was very nerve-wracking.
Yeah, cameras, and it was looked like it was the big time.
Yeah, I did. I felt really like it was definitely a moment of feeling like I had arrived in a certain aspect to be able to share these, you know, very serious things that had sort of happened in my life and to try and raise awareness in a big way. Like, and so I was really, really, I was really pleased, A, that the Sunday Project wanted to do a piece on FASD and that it interested them. And also their sensitivity towards the way they put that segment together. I was really pleased with the result. So yeah.
Were you nervous that they might, you know, because how sometimes TV can change the narrative? Were you nervous about that? Right.
Yes, I'm very, very nervous about anything that I do in the media, and I do go through a lot of like checks and balances to make sure that they have a good understanding about language and stigma and sort of the vein of the story. I really focus heavily on like no shame, no blame. I was raised and loved and cared for by my birth mother, and we have a very close, tight relationship. And it's, I'm here in this position now being able to speak to you because of her help and her guidance and her intervention. So, you know, I'm always about propping up women and giving them the information, giving all of Australians the information that they need to know to make these informed decisions without shame or blame. So I'm very, very cautious about what I do in the media. Yeah.
What, if you can recall, what was the feedback like?
I think it was really positive. I had a lot of, obviously, from the, you know, with people that I have worked alongside, and I work with a couple organizations here, and I got really positive feedback from them. I had a few people reach out to me and sort of thank me. I had a man with VASD in the community reach out to me and say thank you for bringing this to light, for sharing this. And so, yeah, I had definitely lots of warm fuzzies. I felt like it had been done well without maybe potentially scaring people, which is trying to strike the balance there of informing them without having these knee-jerk sort of reactions.
I get that. It is a dance.
It's totally a dance.
Now, let me ask you this. Are people surprised when you mention that you have FASD? Because I couldn't tell, Jessica, if I talked to you, I couldn't tell. Yeah, right? No. You know, your expressive language, girl, you're on point, right? And like professional. And do people like give you a double take and say, what?
All the time. It's like it's a constant battle, and my language skills are strong. It's my skill, and I've really tried to cultivate that, but it is a double-edged sword for me. And yeah, it's funny, like people want to speak to me because, well, one, I'm happy to talk about it, and I think B, because I have, you know, I was diagnosed quite late. I didn't have intervention as a child, and so I have this perspective in this hindsight of like learning after the fact. And yeah, but it, sorry, I've digressed a little bit, but yeah, no, it is a really tricky one, and I do struggle with it. And like people will come up to me and people who know about FASD, and you know, clinicians and advocates and others, and in the past, you know, they come up to me and they sort of, well, you're obviously high functioning, or well, you're obviously,
yeah, or, that, you're word, obviously that word that. Gets me.
It gets me too.
Yeah, because really that means like your struggles don't matter then, like. Then people can still hold expectations over you, right? Anywho, here's my point. I was going to just say that too, double-edged sword, because the appearance of competence, but then when you struggle or your symptoms are present, you know, people just expect or assume that that might be willful because, you know, you've got it mostly put together besides like a few things you struggle with.
Well, I think it's like it's a little bit of a facade too. Like, you know, it takes me a lot of energy and effort to be here presenting to you how I'm presenting. Like, you know, I spend a lot of effort, you know, playing with my words and reading sort of, you know, how the language, and I've had really good mentorship to learn how to speak about FASD, and you know, and getting myself ready and together and wanting to present myself in a certain way, you know, it comes from, you know, just obviously the type of person that I am and what I like. But it doesn't come out with, like, I think people think that it's easier for me to express myself and to be here and to be present, but I do mask a lot.
Fair.
Asking?
Yep. Do you find that you have a certain amount of capacity, like to do that presentation, an hour, 2 hours, 3 hours, and then you need to like rest, take a break, chill out?
Absolutely. I definitely, so whenever I've done sort of interviews or had to write blogs or anything like that, but definitely a lot of talking, I need a lot of rest. And I do get quite exhausted. I have lots of issues with fatigue and just sensory overload. I've got a lot of sensory issues.
I appreciate you sharing. That's all. You're really helping lots of people who are listening to this right now. And the goal is when they hear you, they hear your words, but you're also sharing, look, I have great expressive language. It's my strength, but I'm also exhausted after. And it takes a lot of capacity to do this, but then I need a break. And so I'm hoping that when parents listen to that and they think, oh, well, my kid's high functioning, and they use that word and they listen to you, and then that, you know, their son or daughter is doing real well for 2 or 3 hours, but then starts to show some symptoms of fatigue and then some anger, or they get frustrated. And now I want parents to go, I remember what Jessica was saying. It's just, you know, fatigue is a part of it. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. It's really no different for me. I need a lot of downtime. I get really overstimulated. I have meltdowns. I had this 3-day meltdown after my birthday, which was the end of last month. And it was because I had gotten overstimulated and I couldn't, and I'd gotten too overstimulated. I was too stressed. There was too much going on. And I literally fell apart for 3 days, you know, and I couldn't do anything. Brain fog, lack of functioning. I struggle a lot with my executive function, of course, which is the bane of anyone with FASD's existence. Yeah. And it's really difficult. It's difficult to facilitate things for myself. I have a lot more support in my life to help with those things, and it's because of that support that I'm here and I'm able to, sort of get here, be in front of you and speak. But it takes a lot, and it takes a lot of cognitive energy, and I really am tired after.
Well, I'll tell you right now, you're doing a kick-ass job. So you're doing great. So keep it up. And I totally understand that. And so if you don't mind, I'd like to go back, because you mentioned your mom. And I don't know if you know, the thing about me is that I love birth moms, right? So, and I've never met a mom ever that would ever want to hurt their kid. And so we could dive into that story a little bit about your birth mom. And you weren't diagnosed till you said you were later. How old when you got your diagnosis?
So I got my diagnosis 2 weeks before my 33rd birthday. I'm 36 now. I've just turned 36. It took 4 years to get the diagnosis. So mum had broached FASD with me it was a bit of a, there's definitely a bit of a story there because it took quite some time. But mum broached FASD with me about 4 years before I actually got the diagnosis, actually maybe more even.
Wow.
Before I got diagnosis. So yeah, it was, it sort of had come back. It had been on the back of 10 years of illness. I had been very, very unwell pretty much since my early adulthood, even into my teenage years, the signs were there. Because I wasn't coping in school, I wasn't coping in life. And so then, we didn't know, we had no awareness of why I was the way that I was or had these sort of quirks the way that I did. And by the time I sort of left home, after high school, I had really wanted to forge my life as an adult. I wanted to adult and I wanted to be independent and do everything everyone else was doing.
Yep.
I went off and did that, but of course I didn't do it well and I couldn't manage all the expectations that were placed upon me. So pretty much, and from the start of leaving home till into my 20s, I was slowly but quite surely going downhill in the sense that,
No, and then, it's amazing story that you're sharing, by the way. And it's a lot of super courage, right? Because it's, you know, you're telling people about not your most shining of moments. But let me just tell you, it's teaching a lot of people who are just even listening to this right now. When you wanted to adult, okay, and you said, because you noticed, right, your peers were doing things and they were growing up, jobs, marriage, eventually even houses on their own, and maybe, and you weren't at that level. Did you notice that? And were you thinking like, why can't I acquire this?
Yes, yes, absolutely. And I feel like I noticed that from very early on in my life. I reckon from the age of 4, 5, 6, I noticed how children were interacting differently to me. But absolutely, when I was trying to adult and, you know, I moved to the city and I got a job and the aim was to study and sort of make a life for myself, it did become very apparent that people were around me, were making friends, were having outings, were, you know, sort of engaging in the community. And not only were they engaging in the community, but they were getting their license and they were, you know, and they were, they started as we got older, obviously not early in my early 20s, but as they got older, you know, they'd partner up and they would buy their houses and they would, you know, have fancier cars and better paying jobs. And I was watching this and I was seeing all these people surpass me. And like, and then, you know, and then as I got older, people much younger than me were achieving things that I had not quite yet grasped or achieved, or I felt like I should have in my life that I didn't. And what it, and I was seeing that obviously much earlier on in my life, in my school life as well, but seeing that in my adult life based on my childhood history as well and my childhood experiences, I had become like, what was happening for me internally is thinking that it, this was my personal failing. It was my fault and that I was stupid. I obviously wasn't very smart. I obviously wasn't very likable because I couldn't make and keep friends. I had a very isolated sort of existence, even though I was working in hospitality at the time and it was lots of people, lots of stimuli, you know, all that sort of stuff and lots of opportunity to meet people and to be involved in sort of what the community was doing. The inexplicable reasons that I felt, because I didn't have any answers, I didn't have any awareness, those things weren't happening for me and I wasn't moving forward and I was really lonely and I blamed myself. And I had been blaming myself for these failings my entire life. And what was happening for me at that time, because I was getting, I had anxiety and depression and I had quite serious mental health issues during that time that got progressively worse because, you know, these things weren't being addressed or I didn't know how to address them or what the problem was. And I internalized it all. I internalized everything that had happened in my childhood, all the traumatic sort of things that had occurred, and then coming into my adulthood and feeling like I was failing and that nobody liked me and that I was sort of alone. I was internalizing that, and it became huge bouts of self-loathing and feelings of failure. And I was seeing medical professionals at the time, and it was reinforced by the medical professional that I was seeing. And so it was a very dark time for me. My 20s and my high school years and my 20s was pretty awful experiences I had. Yeah.
But it's not from you not wanting to do well and to work and to contribute and to make, you wanted to do these things, right? This was, and here's the point I'm trying to get at, who, you know, when parents are thinking that maybe their kid is lazy, unmotivated, that's not the case for folks with FASD. That is a direct result of the impact of the brain injury. And it's not that the individual does not want to do things well, correct?
Absolutely. Like absolutely. Like I consider myself to be quite an ambitious person.
Yeah, and for sure.
I'm and I want to do well, and this I expected to do better, and there was expectations were placed upon me because I spoke well, because I sort of presented in, like, you know, that I had all the tools and that all the capacity to achieve kind of to a high standard, or, you know, and it, you know, those, I really felt those expectations, but I'm also a person who did really want to achieve and did really see myself, like, a career was important to me, having financial success was important to me, and none of those things really eventuated in my life. And I've had to spend, obviously, receiving the diagnosis and learning about it has been a huge shift.
Yeah, in totally.
In my sense of self, in how I perceive myself and the world around me. I feel like I was living, I was absolutely living blind. I was going through life really in the dark, and maybe this sounds a little bit melodramatic to some people, but it was like understanding that I had FASD was, it was completely cathartic. It was a huge, and I still process it, and I'm still learning, and I still have a long way to go, because I do have a lot of trauma.
Yeah, but
understanding the diagnosis and understanding that this was not me, this was not because I was intrinsically defective, you know,
wasn't. You're not the problem.
Yes.
Like, you're it's not because of flawed character.
Yes, exactly. And it was being reinforced to me, like, you're obviously smart, so you're capable. You're smart, so you're capable.
Oh, gosh. I am so sorry you went through that, man, because what an awful thing to say. But we also have to have empathy for other people, because they didn't know either. Like, you know, people don't, they just don't know. And, you know, one of the things I say is that the neurotypical population takes people at face value, right? Mm-hmm. So if you look normal and you talk normal, then everything else must be working. And so, you know, I'm doing probably the same thing that you're trying to do, is have the population take people at brain value. And then once you can take someone, you can take someone at brain value, their face value actually goes up, right?
Yeah.
Instead of the all these compounding expectations, which leads to resentments, not only from, you know, internally yourself, but externally. Here's my question. So when you're going through all this shit and you're trying to adult, and it, you know, executive functioning just will not allow it, what kind of role did your mom play in all of this when you were pushing to do it on your own? Like, was she supportive? Like, what kind of dynamic was going on there during that time?
Oh, so mom has always been like a sort of a stalwart of support. So she's always been very present in our lives. We have a very close relationship. And so, but I also, I spent a lot of those early years like really pushing against her, like, you know, and having, and not, and as well, like, I think not, maybe not being fully aware as well of how she was supporting me also, and like how much I kind of needed that. But so I was constantly pushing against it and trying to, so in that sense, you know, we definitely had some volatile moments, but, you know, I can't say that, you know, I didn't, because I was having meltdowns all the time.
Sure. She was trying to give you some guidance, and you were like, I'm a big girl, I could do it all by myself. But at the same time, like, that internal turmoil where, you know, you are struggling. And so there is that sort of that grief and loss that comes along with it, but it's, you're not aware. So we know that, you know, anger is SAD's bodyguard, but you don't know, like, neurotypical FASD. I know there's could be more aggressive in terms of those situations, but that's also teenage pushback too. We don't see that they're trying to help.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, and it's not like I wasn't coming to her often and asking for help. And I'll give you an example of kind of like how, and again, like, I have better skills now being older. When I first moved to the city, And I was, you know, really out of home. I had traveled first, and I'm very lucky that I got this chance to go overseas, and I did a big trip, and, you know, I had lots of opportunities and I had lots of privilege. Anyway, so I had moved to the city and I'd moved to this house and I needed to buy a bed. And I was 21 years old and I had just bought like a blow-up mattress as in interim to buy a bed. And I knew that, you know, I knew where the beds were sold and I knew that I would need to get it delivered and you know, but I had to basically source a bed, make the decision about the bed, and then organize a pickup person, a delivery person to do that, right? Seems pretty basic, right? You go, you move out, you buy a bed. And I couldn't do that. And I knew that I needed to do it and I kind of knew the steps for how you would do it. But 1 year later, I was still on that blow up mattress and I was cold and I had put my back out and I was deeply unhappy and I literally couldn't navigate finding the place where I wanted to buy the bed, make a decision about which bed I should buy, and in the same time organize a delivery person, source and organize a delivery person to pick that bed up on the day that needed to be picked up and have it delivered to my house. Like, I couldn't action those steps at 21 years old. I couldn't buy myself a bed. And what ended up happening is I called mum in a fit of tears and said, I don't know what I'm doing. I can't do this. This is so hard. I'm on this bed, you know, sort of thing. And my mum flew down to Melbourne and she bought, and something that I couldn't do in a year, she did for me in 4 hours.
And so while you're deeply thankful, perhaps you're like, why couldn't I just freaking do that?
Yeah, of course. And the frustration is real. And I really enjoyed also like, you know, talking about chronic frustration and chronic confusion and chronic sort of despair and just not, I just couldn't comprehend why these things in my life seemed so hard and people were just doing it like with the click of their fingers. Yeah. And I really couldn't understand it. And living in that perpetual confusion and like sort of sense of difficulty while you're being told that you're capable and that you should do this and that it shouldn't be difficult for you and it shouldn't be this and you should just go do that, but having all of that, like it's really awful.
Jeez, man. It's like really this awful. Living in this state of angst.
Yes.
You know, which is why it just perpetuates the mental health. And so you're right. Like hindsight, you must be looking back and going, no wonder. And same with your mom. Now, I do want to get to that. I want to get to the here and the now, but I just want to tie up that story of, if you can remember, like who approached who? Did your mom say, oh my gosh, Jessica, I think this might be a thing. Like it might be. Like how did that come about?
Okay, so what had happened is, it is a little bit lengthy. I'll try and be concise in the story.
Guess what? You could tell it as long or as short as you want. It's my podcast. Okay. I'm the boss. We could do what we want.
Okay. So what had basically happened is, yeah, I've gone into my adult life. I've moved to Melbourne. I can't handle the adulting. It's not sustainable for me. I've got problems with, I've got sensory integration stuff. I've got interoception stuff. I've got central nervous system issues, you know, all of those things. And I started to become, and then on top of that, because of, you know, the lack of understanding, I had severe anxiety and I was always dealing with sort of, you know, long bouts of depression and things like that. But I was, you know, I was trying to do life, you know, and the demands were too much. I tried to work and go to uni and I did graduate from university.
Nice.
But by the end of that time, like, well, basically I had just been slowly getting sicker and sicker and sicker. And so, and by what I mean by that is that physically I wasn't managing fatigue. I was getting more and more fatigued. Heart palpitations, muscle issues, gut issues, migraines, you know, light sensitive, you know, all of this stuff was sort of like coming like hard and fast and getting worse and worse. And so I was seeing a GP at that time who had basically put me on to psychology services. I had severe iron deficiency as well, which of course is like comorbid
issue. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so that coupled with trying to sort of make it in the world on my own led me down a pretty dark path, and I became really sick. And the reason that I, well, what I believe is the reason I also became so unwell is because I had a GP at that time who treated every physical symptom that I was having. She either dismissed as not very significant or not worthy of investigation, or she told me that it was psychosomatic, that I was just anxious, and that the reason I was getting headaches and I had gut issues and I was, you know, fatigued all the time was because I had iron deficiency and I was anxious, and that there was nothing wrong with me, that I should see a psychologist and I should get on with it. And I was in that clinic nearly every week for 5 years. And I was going into that clinic and often I would go in there and I would burst into tears and I would say, there's something wrong. Something is very, very wrong and I can't do anything. I feel awful and I have, you know, brain fog and I can't get anything done. And I'm like, you know, all these sort of things were happening for me, and both physically and mentally and obviously cognitively. And I was essentially gaslit for 5 years.
Oh my gosh.
And she wouldn't write me a referral. I would ask her to invest. I said, look, I have all these symptoms, like something must be wrong, you know, to have migraines and gut issues and sore joints and heart palpitations and all have all these things happening. And there must be something. And she was like, no, 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 you're fine. Off you go. You need some time management skills. You need to be, you know, so what that did, of course, is fed my feelings of failure and fed my feelings of self-loathing, because I truly thought that everyone felt how I felt, but they were managing better. I just thought everyone is dealing with what you're dealing with, but, you know, they can still work and make friends and drive their cars and have a life. You're just a failure. You just need to do better. So, and I am getting to mum. So that was happening to me for a really long time. And mum had flown me up when the doctor had refused to give me referrals to like specialists, you know, gastroenterologists, you know, and the likes.
Like not even OT?
Not OT.
Not even occupational therapy? She wasn't like, here you go, if you're here, this could help with regulate?
No, I was basically told, I was seeing a psychologist at the time and we were doing CBT, you know, therapy, which of course was not particularly effective for me.
Right.
And I've moved on to other therapies. But no, I was basically told by this GP, she was giving me shots for iron deficiency. And as soon as my bloods were in like a normal range, she'd say, you're fine. There's nothing wrong with you. And she would tell me that I was fine. And I remember this because at the height of my sickness and what ended up, my diagnosis ended up being chronic fatigue syndrome. I had severe chronic fatigue, which I still have to manage. However, I am much better now. But I had severe chronic fatigue and I was diagnosed with postural orthostatic tachycardia as well, or POTS syndrome, which could have easily been diagnosed with this. I was never diagnosed with this doctor. I basically deteriorated in front of her eyes. And I remember this, like, this really something that stood out for me a lot is I was about 27 years old and I was going in, I think, for an iron shot. And there was two or three steps to get into this clinic, and there was railings on either side. And I remember at 27 years old having to hold onto the railing, and I walked up the steps one at a time, like 1 foot, then the other on the first step, then 1 foot, then the other on the second step, to get there. And up after I got up those three steps, those two or three steps, I was gassed. I was completely out of breath. I was like, I wanted to cry. I had no energy. Like I was severely sick. And I walked into that doctor's office, and when I left, she said, "There's nothing wrong with you. You need to try harder." And I'm 27 years old, and I can't even walk up two flights of steps, not a flight, but, two steps. And anyway, so it got really bad. It got really, really bad, and my mental health got really, really bad. And my mum and I was constantly on the phone with my mother, and she was like, kept telling me to ask the doctor about this. Ask, why is this not happening? Why is this not happening? Why is that not happening? And it got so full on. And I think I remember the phone call. I remember the moment that I think my mum decided to intervene in a significant and serious way. And I think I had been on the phone, and I was really grey at that stage. I was quite grey. I was quite drawn. I was very underweight. And I wanted to die. Like I was, my mental health was not in a good way, and she knew it. And I remember speaking to her on the phone, and she says, and I remember her sort of saying, like, something is really wrong here. Something is really, really wrong. And she approached me the next day, because, I'm nearly 30 years old at this stage as well. Like, I'm not far off 30. And she sort of, had an intervention with me over the phone and sort of said to me, look, I want to take over your healthcare. Please let me, please let me take over your healthcare. I will pay for everything. I will get you to the specialists. Something is really wrong. And so we started doing that. And I went to a holistic doctor, and we did all the tests. And I was really in a bad way. I was close to a stroke or organ failure, and I needed to stop working immediately, which I was barely managing anyway. And that was, and so I started sort of new treatment plan. We still didn't really know what was wrong, and we were looking at autoimmune issues. And so that went on for some time, and I got, disability support. And I stopped working because I couldn't stop working because I had to pay my rent. And I got some disability support, and I was able to stop working and visit more specialists. And then my mother's husband was also worked in care, like youth care, and happened to be caring for a young person with FASD. And her husband would come home and say, oh, well, this individual reminds me so much of Jessica. She reminds me so much of Jessica. Oh, my God, they're so similar, which I didn't take kindly. I didn't like that very much at the time because I knew that this individual was severely disabled and needed a lot of support and care. And so to be told that I was like that person at the time was very confronting for me. Anyway, so it happened to be I was in the city, mum was up north, and she happened to watch a news program that highlighted FASD, and it was a Four Corners episode called Hidden Harm, and it featured a really fabulous birth mother. Yes.
Yeah. I don't know if I spent time with Anne, but I've been to your mum. Did you come see me, or was it your mum that saw me?
My mom went did a training.
Yeah. Okay. Cool. Yeah. So Anne, right? That's awesome. She's the best. So your mom legend. Seen this. Yeah. I love how Aussies use that legend. What an F word. What a good. She really is. So your mom sees this and probably goes like, holy crap.
So my mom sees this episode and she's like, oh my God, this is what the problem is. This is what's happening to my daughter. And it was pretty much all on from there, but it took time. So my mom sees this episode, the light bulb goes off, and she goes, oh my gosh, like, this is what's happening. And so she starts doing her research, and I don't know how long exactly between her watching the episode and her approaching me, but I don't think there was too much time. Anyway, so she sat me down. I think we were on the phone, and she sort of like sat me down and she said, and she was as gentle as she could be, of course. And she said, this is what I think is happening. She says, I think you've been like, you know, I drank, I didn't know I was pregnant. And that was the reason that I was exposed, is because my mother didn't know she was pregnant. And once she did know she was pregnant, she stopped drinking. Sure. But, you know, the damage is done, you know, it doesn't take much. Anyway, so she sat me down and she said, you know, this is what I think is happening. And I did not take that well.
Right.
I was not like receptive to that.
Yeah. Visceral reaction. Because was it did you feel like she was trying to say that you were disabled, or that was the reaction visceral from, were you angry at your mom?
I wasn't angry at mom, actually. No. And it's funny because a lot of people, like when they talk to, I'm just saying generally, not about having you ask the question just then. I do get a lot, like, it's in the question, it's insinuated that I would be mad at mom, or I would have this really strong reaction against my mom, in the sense, oh, you did this to me. But I've never felt that way. And I've never, even when she first said it to me, it's not what popped into my mind. What popped into my mind and what made me, I think, react so strongly is that, one, I assumed that if anything was wrong with your brain, that it just meant that you weren't very smart.
Right.
And so because I had had a lot of struggle in school, and I had a lot of contrast between feeling like not very capable and not performing well in academia and things like that, but being told that I was capable and that I was smart. And I had quite an internal battle around my own sense of self and feeling that I was capable and that I was smart, right? So when mum told me that she thinks that, you know, I had a brain injury and that my brain was the problem, I just thought she was telling me that I was stupid.
Yeah.
And so I was really unhappy, because I thought, you know, it was definitely a really triggering thing for me to, based on the little bit of knowledge that I had at the time, and obviously the incorrect understanding at the time, that brain injury makes you dumb. And I don't mean that in any offensive way.
No, everyone's picking up what you're putting down.
Yeah. And so it was my own ignorance and obviously all my insecurity and all these experiences that I had. And so I rejected it outright. Like, I got really angry.
You wanted to be normal. And so she's basically telling you weren't. And so something you yearned for so long, that's the reaction.
Exactly. You know, she was telling me that all this, like what I had tried to, what I was working for and what I was trying to achieve in my life was not going to ever be feasible. Like, I would just never achieve that. That's how I felt, right, you know. Right.
So where was the switch, or was it like a gradual transition to, did you one day go on Google yourself and see, like, where did you start to come into
the knowing? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, again, I can only, like, it's only, I only have mum to thank for that, because
what's your mom's name?
Her name is Sue.
Sue. That is my mother's name.
Really?
I shit you not. Yeah, Sue. So shout out to Sue. So we can call her Sue. So Sue helped you through all of this, even in the understanding of it?
Yeah. So, but it took some time. So when she first broached it after she saw the show, basically I just screamed at her and called her all sorts of names, and I was really awful, and had a full on meltdown, and I was not having a bar of it. And she was, despite how sort of ugly I was towards her about it, you know, she persevered and she kept trying to say, sort of make me see, you know. And sort of she started her research and she started putting little tidbits. But every time she would sort of give me a little piece of information around FASD or on how it sort of related to me, I would get angry and I would shut her down and I would tell her that I didn't want to talk about it and that she didn't know what she was talking about and da-da-da-da-da. So what she did is started to compile folders of information and particularly information about how FASD presents and has presented in my life through the stages of my life. And she did that for a year without me sort of realizing that she was doing all this work.
Oh my gosh. I think, did she come see me during that time?
I think she saw you after that, yeah. But she was speaking quite a lot with Anne Russell and the No FASD organization, sure. And she was joining all the groups, you know, and she was doing all the research. And what she was doing is collating all the information that she knew, like clinical information and other, that she knew was related to the way that I presented, right. and things that happened in my life. And what she did is she put together three large A4 folders of clinical research information and then a history of my life, the history of my birth story, which I knew fairly well, but I got some more details about my birth story, about pregnancy. And then the next time I went to visit her a year later, she presented me with these folders and she said, and she bribed me as well. And so she told me.
That's a good mom.
Yeah. So she told me that if, you know, well, she had, you know, she'd been reading the information and she like bribery works. Yeah. And basically she told me she would take me to New Zealand for our Christmas holiday. She'd take me on a holiday if I read these folders. And at the end, if I still believe that FASD wasn't the issue for me after I read these folders, then she would drop it and she wouldn't talk about it anymore. But of course, I was halfway through the first folder and there was a lot of stuff about, you know, early life, and I'm quite aware of things like neurological issues that I was having in my early life and visiting doctors. Mum was taking me to doctors very early in my life, saying there's a couple odd things happening here. And of course, we were fobbed off. We was always told, oh, it's behavior, she'll grow out of it. Oh, this is not a thing. I'm not looking at, like, you know, it was this constant sort of dismissal, right?
Right.
And so I started reading this folder and, you know, I raged a bit at first. I didn't do that. I didn't do this. I don't do that. But of course, as I got through it, it became more and more that this information was speaking to me, that this very much was me. And by the time I sort of reached the section around the sensory issues and like the physical elements and also examples of how executive function presents in real world situations, I just burst into tears. Like I was like, oh my God, like I was blown away with how accurate this information could be to my life and not have any, and not be written for me, you know?
Yeah. Like it's like, this is me. You think they were following you. So
exactly.
So like you read this, you're like, oh gosh, you're halfway through the first one. This is me. Like what a journey, an emotional journey. And then you gobble up the information. And so then you're like, mom, I'm in, like, let's try. And then you started the process of trying to get a diagnosis.
Pretty much. So, yeah. So it had definitely taken that year to sort of get me on side, essentially. And then, yeah, I think I was like a little bit, you know, tentative at first, sure. But I was by the end of that day and a lot of tears later, I accepted that yeah, okay, I think that this is valid, you know, that there's something. And it's the thing is as well, is that I knew my birth story.
Right.
I knew my birth story from a very young age. And had anyone at any time, any of those doctors that I had seen over the past 10 years, or even the childhood doctors that we had seen, had asked about alcohol consumption, mum obviously could have said yes, but I would have been able to say, yes, I know that there was alcohol consumption during my gestation. But no one asked.
No one
and asked. I think no one asked, not a single doctor asked. I couldn't say 110%, but I know during my visits with that original GP that I saw, my psychologist that I saw, I often spoke about having had a difficult birth, having had a difficult pregnancy and things like that. So, you know, the connection was there and I knew the information, but no health professional put that together and no one intervened. Even though I was coming in
and
to the doctor's office
help.
And clearly showing the signs.
And they just dismissed
it. Really clearly, yeah.
Did you want to go back to your doctors after you got the diagnosis and just put the piece of paper on their desks and say, take that?
Well, I'm still thinking about approaching that clinic or at least writing a letter to the clinic.
Sure.
Because I stayed at that clinic. And again, like I would say, my lack of ability to have the executive function to
sure.
switch to
yep.
make the decisions about a new, like, had left me in that very toxic situation where I wasn't getting the healthcare that I needed. And I feel very sore about that. And look, I have great clinicians and amazing doctors in my life at the moment. And I don't want to tar.
Right, right. You're not painting, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. I understand. But there.
I did have a very awful experience with many health professionals. And so, yeah, I have definitely thought, it hasn't happened yet, but it's still something very clear in my mind where I would like to approach that clinic.
Yeah, did you feel validated? Like, take me through. Okay, so we'll skip 4 years, right? Because that's a story in itself. And then you get the results back and they say, yeah, Jessica, this is what's going on. What was it? Validation, relief? What were you thinking when you got your diagnosis?
I think there was definitely a weight off the shoulders and there was this sense of, oh my God, like, yeah, it's really true now. I have it on a piece of paper. But I'd had 4 years seeking out the diagnosis to also come to terms with the fact that I had FASD.
Right.
It was quite, you know, and for me, it was by this stage, the evidence was so strong. It would be, for me, I would have been very, very surprised had I not been diagnosed.
Got it.
And
got it.
Yeah.
No, that totally makes sense.
Yeah. So there still was a moment, like it definitely still had quite strong feelings around like officially getting the piece of paper, especially 4 years seeking it. And there was a sense of vindication in the sense that I was diagnosed with FASD with the sentinel facial features. And I had gone to a geneticist because it's very difficult to find any FASD professional that can diagnose. They don't diagnose adults. They only diagnose children. And so it was very difficult. And so I had gone to a geneticist first to try specifically asking to go through the diagnostic criteria of FASD to assess me. And that experience with the geneticist was a pretty awful one in the sense that he laughed at me, you know, he mocked me for having come in to ask to have a FASD assessment.
Yeah.
And I was mocked and I had my eyes rolled at me and I had been told that I couldn't possibly, he told me within the first 5 minutes that I couldn't possibly have FASD because I didn't have epileptic seizures. And I had done a clinical workshop. I'd been invited to the second Australasian FASD conference, which I attended, and I had been invited to do a clinical workshop while I was there. So I knew how to measure the gap between the eyes. I knew what they were looking for. I knew, you know, the primary and secondary characteristics in that sense. So I had a pretty good understanding of what needed to happen in order to, you know, get all the information and decipher, you know, the facial features and also the cognitive stuff. And I sat there in his office while he mocked me, while he rolled his eyes, while he told me that I couldn't possibly have FASD, when he told me that, you know, like, why would I want this diagnosis, and have him measure me. And then I had to sort of encourage him. I said, please measure me. Please assess my facial features. Here are some photos of when I was a kid. Here's like this, here's that. Jeez, and he picked up his desk ruler and, like, I don't know, he just did everything wrong. He did everything wrong while he mocked me for, like, as if I didn't know what I was talking about, and everything he did was wrong. And it was an awful experience. It was awful.
You're like the FASD version of Aaron Brockovich. You know, that's why I'm getting those vibes, dude. I am totally getting those vibes. So I'm getting this whole picture is this doctor, this is where you go in and you have the paper with your diagnosis and you slam it on his desk and say, what about this, asshole? Right?
Well, I kind of feel like, and I'm just like, and look in, you know, I'm sure that he probably doesn't get very many adults ever asking him about FASD, but the fact that he came to me with such, you know, he treated me with
like this stain. And you're bringing evidence to him in rational thinking. Oh, that guy's ego. Anywho. Oh my goodness, Jessica Birch hit it out of the park. Home run. That was excellent. Thank you for sharing. And you can see why I need two parts, folks, because we kept talking and talking and talking. And I was just like, keep talking because it is all great. So here's a couple of notes I've got for example, okay? What she talked about that I want to point out she started talking about how her appearance, because if you check out her picture, you can see it at our blog at fasdsuccess.com/podcast. Looks normal, talks normal, right? Pretty young woman. And so because of that, she talked about how her appearance, you know, people don't think she had FASD. She talked about how she struggled with that. She said, well, people tell her, you're obviously high functioning. And we both kind of balked at that word, right? And I thought she nailed it. She talked about how not liking high functioning, me neither, because it creates assumptions and expectations. It still gives you permission to expect more than sometimes the person could function at. So I don't like it. She doesn't like it. Assumptions and expectations. I agree with her. She talked about how much energy it takes to present herself. What she does get ready and the self-care required after. 100%. So when you see an individual on the spectrum and they're put together and they're either on a video, they're in a presentation, they're at a conference, and you see them really kicking butt, please understand that to get herself together for that took a really long time, and then she probably needed a few days after this, after she did this interview. You know, it does take a lot of capacity to do that, for sure. But I love how she was saying, even though, you know, she talked about everything that's gone on, she's where she's at because of that support. That support from her mom is the reason why she's able to be there. And kudos to her mom. Kudos to her mom. You know, we love all moms, birth moms. And Jessica was diagnosed before her 33rd birthday. It took 4 freaking years to get a diagnosis. Talk about a hole in the system. All over the planet. This isn't just pointing the finger at Australia, who are probably, for the most part, kicking the most butt when it comes to FASD on the planet. And something we really need to consider is that, you know, how she talked about in her late teens and early adulthood that she wasn't coping well. No one understood why. She spoke of how she thought it was her personal failings, and that she couldn't make it on her own, in her own home. She thought she was stupid. She couldn't keep friends. Now, this happens to a great number of our guys. And she says, I just wasn't moving forward. And then we talk about the impact of not knowing, because I know a lot of people say, I don't want to tell my kid. What she ended up doing was internalizing it all. She felt like no one liked her. She had bouts of self-loathing. So there's nothing that you could say to most individuals on the spectrum to try and make them feel bad so they'll change their behavior. The only thing that does is create self-loathing, which was reinforced by even her medical professionals she was seeing, telling her to get over it. Then I was asking what happened when she did get diagnosed. She said how it was a big lift, and it changed the way she perceived herself and the world around her. She said, understanding I had FASD was cathartic. I still process it, and I'm still learning as I have lots of trauma, no doubt, after 33 years before getting a diagnosis. But understanding it isn't me. I hear this all the time from individuals on the spectrum that I talk to. What a relief to know that it's not your personality. It's your brain. She's used that example of buying a bed. When we talk about executive functioning, we talk about it's not that they don't want to be interdependent. It's not that they don't want some autonomy. It's just that areas of the brain that are functioning in such a way that limits their ability to be able to do that. And that's what she talked about, buying the bed. I know I needed to do it. I knew the steps, but I couldn't navigate finding the place, making a decision, source out, book deliveries. Those are so many different steps. And so it doesn't matter if she was sore on like the air mattress that probably wasn't blown up. And it took her mom, and it took Jessica saying, please help me. Her mom saying, I'm going to help you, and breaking down those executive functioning barriers. That's how we create success with individuals with FASD. First, we need to buy in that getting help is important. How do we do that? By modeling interdependence, by talking about our weaknesses as well. I know it's hard for some of us, but to share that we all have weaknesses. And so once mother bought in, daughter bought in, and I'm probably sure mother bought in before daughter, that she was able to get these things. So it's not the want isn't there. It's the steps that it takes in order to get there. And we talked about trying to be an adult on her own. You know, she says, I couldn't action those steps when she was talking about buying the bed. I couldn't comprehend why these things were so hard, living in that perpetual state, sense of confusion. Just imagine that's you, man. Well, you are being told you are capable and you should be able to do this and you should be able to do that. It was awful. And trying to be an adult on her own, the demands were too much. I tried to go to work and go to university, but slowly I was getting sicker and sicker. Physically, I wasn't managing, was seeing a general practitioner who put me on psychological service that coupled with trying to make it on my own led me on a dark path. I became so sick. I had a GP at the time who treated every physical symptom I was having. She either dismissed it as not significant or worthy of investigation, or she said it was psychosomatic. I was just anxious. The reason was because I had a high iron deficiency and I was anxious. There was nothing wrong with me, and I should see a psychologist and get on with it. Man. And she went there for every 5 years, and we talk about perseveration and not being able to understand to move on to a different healthcare provider. And she deteriorated so badly until her mom said, you know what, enough is enough. I'm going to do this. I'm going to help you. I'm going to stop right there because we're getting a little long in the tooth in terms of me yapping. But I just want to hammer home how important it is and how frustrated and confused your guys are. They're just as frustrated with themselves as you are with them. I just want you to know that. So when you look at your kid and see someone who you might feel is capable and just not putting in an effort, not putting in the motivation, no way, man. They want to do good. There's reasons why they aren't able to. And so we have to address those issues. And once you can, your kids can totally flourish. And so can you. But it's about getting that understanding. And we're going to talk in the next episode about all the ways that and all the awesome things that Jessica is doing in order to make her successful. We go into her daily routine and how she manages, how she copes, and what she's doing. This is someone that we need to look up to. And hopefully if you even get, I don't think I swore too much, so you can even get your kids to listen to it. I hope we didn't, whatever. Here, I'm telling you this, this might be a little bit of a reality, like a little bit of a whoa, that's harsh. But I've seen this narrative happen so many times, and we are just blessed that Jessica's able to have such a supportive mom to help her get through this and still deal with it. As you'll find out, she's still dealing. You know, she just has more coping mechanisms. And so you could deal with it. This isn't a diagnosis of FASD is lifelong, but it doesn't mean it's a life sentence. It doesn't have to be. And I know you're trying your absolute very best. However, sometimes it's important to look that these things are not about you, that they're happening to you because you're the safe person. And I know you don't want to be that safe person. I'm not saying you should be taking any physical lumps, safety first. But what I am saying is they're not here to ruin your life. They're not trying to make things difficult. They are struggling and they need your support. And you're awesome. You're awesome because you're here. If you're listening to this right now, man, you're awesome. Like, this is an hour 15 into it, and by golly, Miss Molly, you guys are the best. You're going to do great. And we just celebrated a couple weeks ago Mother's Day. I hope you had a good one because I think you're a good mom. So there. And if you're a dad, I think you're a freaking awesome dad too. How about that? We're going to get through this, and we're going to get through it together because you know why? What else are we going to do? Who else do we got? Okay, until next time, let me know. You could write me, jeff@fasdforever.com. Did you like this episode? Did you learn anything? Any aha moments? Just let's chat, y'all. Hope you have a fantastic day. I love you. You're a great person. You're a great parent. I'll see you next week. Bye.